Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
Hey everybody, welcome back to another edition of Bavarian Podcast Works. This is Chuck Smith, and I'm here to bring you the weekend warm-up, BFW's weekly show where we hit on all the biggest news of the week. Apologies for this edition of the show being distributed a little bit later than usual. Timing and scheduling was a bit of a challenge, especially with the podcast-heavy schedule over the last few days. The international break, the start of the Bundesliga season, well, the restart of it after that break, it had a lot going on, so really appreciate you hanging in there and waiting around for this one, even if it was a couple of hours later than usual. Wow. You know, we came off of a pretty significant international break for Germany. The Germans came out of it 2-0. We talked about the results extensively in our post-game shows and in the flagship pod earlier in the week. This was a really incredible journey for Germany. I mean, how this all worked out, to me, it was really impressive. I was really happy with what I saw with the impact that Julian Nagelsmann made on the roster. I loved the way that the team played. It was exciting. It was creative. It was aggressive. And they looked like one unit. And to me, that was absolutely vital to see, especially ahead of the Euros this summer. And that's where I wanted to start out with this show because, you know, as we lead into this restart of the Bundesliga, I wanted to just circle back and look at what might change ahead of the Euros, because what we saw was really, really good from Germany. And I don't know that Julian Nagelsmann is going to be inclined to really change too much. Now, we already started to see things leak out a little bit of positions where Nagelsmann could look to make some changes or players that he might want to bring in. And specifically, I want to focus on three players that were not included on this call-up. Now, let's bear in mind that Alexander Pavlovich was called up but could not play. So he's still firmly in the mix. It's really disappointing for him that he did not get an opportunity to play during this break, but he's still well thought of. If he can finish the season strong for Bayern Munich, he has a good chance of locking up a spot. But other than that, there are three players who I think are going to be contenders to get called up. And I'll actually say it's four because two of them are competing for one spot. So four players for three positions. We'll start on the defensive end. And I think that Niklas Süle and Mats Hummels are both candidates to get called back up. And you'll notice I didn't bring up Nico Schlotterbeck because I have not been a fan of him. I have not really liked his game. I just think he's a step too slow and doesn't anticipate enough. And granted, he probably beats Mats Hummels in a foot race, but he doesn't have the same instincts as Hummels, not the same defensive prowess. Just don't think he's as good as a player. So when I look at that back line, I wasn't fully in love with Antonio Rudiger and Jonathan Tah. Regardless of how I feel, that is who Nagelsmann is rolling with. He is not going to change his center backs. But because they were not, in my mind, great, it could lead Nagelsmann to search out a couple of things. And it leads me to Süle and Hummels. Now, if we look at Süle, there's a couple of advantages he might have and what he might offer. He has the distinct ability to play both center back and right back, which could come in handy. He's a physical force. He is fast. Let's be honest. He's a quick guy, despite his size. And I think he offers a good and different look and someone that could come in and genuinely fill in a starting role if you needed him to. Now, Süle has not had the greatest of seasons with Dortmund. And of course, at the, I guess, you know, at where he goes wrong, I should say, is with his fitness. And that's become a real critical problem for him and how he's perceived. I mean, we have talked about Zula on this show for years, and he is a guy who is a physical marvel in a lot of ways. He's big, he's strong, he's fast. He could do it all, really, when it comes to physical things. The problem with him is he does seem to let his fitness go and get out of shape rather quickly. And out of shape for him would be still Tony Atlas. Man, I am flashing back to the 80s, huh? Charles Atlas. Compared to the rest of us, because he's a professional athlete in his peak. He is a guy who obviously is naturally very strong, naturally very fast. But if he does not stay fit, if he does not maintain things, he can get up to a weight that clubs are not comfortable with. And I think that's been the biggest problem for him. I think if he came up in a different era where there wasn't as much focus on what a guy's weight is or what his body fat percentage is or anything like that, his BMI, he would have been fine. But there is a focus on that now, and teams do care about it, and they care about your durability, and they care about how long you're going to last. And Zula has been his own worst enemy when it comes to that. And I don't necessarily think he's out of shape. I don't think he is physically in any state that would be a problem. But the perception is out there, and he's always going to have to overcome that, because it's not just like this came up at Dortmund. This goes back to his Bayern days, and a couple of different coaches have been critical of him for that. So I think Zola has an outside chance because of his versatility and physically what he can do. And honestly, his ability, he still at this point could be Germany's best center back, but he's going to have a hell of a time overcoming some of those perceptions about him, and it's a shame. As for Mats Hummels, I don't view Hummels as someone that could come in and be a starter. If Nagelsmann were to push the Hummels button, it would be for veteran leadership, for experience on the back line, for someone that could help those center backs during games, at halftime, after games, before games, someone who could help break down what the opposition's going to do, pick up tendencies of attackers, that kind of thing. Hummels, say what you want about the guy, he's one of the smartest, most intelligent defenders that we've seen. He seems to have a knack for making a big play when you need it. And on a side of him having lost a step or two speed-wise, positionally he has been great this season, and he has come up huge for Dortmund several times. And in my mind, it might have been their best center back all season. So I think Hummels is firmly in the mix. I don't know whether Nagelsmann, if he was going to pick between the two, if he had to, whether he would opt for someone who is more battle-ready, probably like Zula, or if he would go with someone like Hummels who could do the job in a pinch and someone that might be able to positively affect the other center backs. Very interesting decision. We'll see what Nagelsmann does, but he does have some options. In the midfield, obviously the name we're going to point to right away is Leon Goretzka. Goretzka, I think, if he can close out this Bundesliga season and Champions League season on a positive note, is going to push himself into the mix. We can see right now where this is going for Nagelsmann. Toni Kroos is not going anywhere, but who he matches up with in midfield and who he partners with is up for debate. Robert Andrich got the call in both of those games, and I thought he was good, but not great. Decent, maybe. Maybe I'm overrating him by saying good. Pascal Gross was another player who Nagelsmann really seems to like. He seems to be number two in the pecking order behind Andrich. I'm not so sure that if Pavlovich and Goretzka don't have great finishes to this season, that they can't overtake those two. And I know Andrich and Gross offer a little bit more of a stay-at-home ability, someone that can let Gross float forward and become more of an option in the attack. However, you have to say that Goretzka has been, in the way that he's been used in the last few games by Thomas Tuchel, has looked really good in that deeper role. And seems like he could be a fit if he was to commit to doing that, to play some kind of role for Germany this summer. I don't know if Nagelsmann is ready to pull that trigger, though, and here's why. We did see the story float last week that some of the players thought that Goretzka could become a distraction, and that he was a negative impact in the locker room because it pressured the coaches to have to play him, and just so they would keep him happy. So the specific example was brought up about the World Cup and Goretzka coming on as a sub for Gundogan and then the match falling apart. And I forget who it was against, so you have to apologize. But bottom line is, if that story's out there, it means somebody talked to someone. This wasn't just fabricated and made up. And maybe Hansi Flick at that point did feel some pressure. And maybe it was because Goretzka's a really good player. And maybe it was because Goretzka was angry and pouted. I don't know. We don't know why Hansi Flick made this up at the time. We don't know if this is a disgruntled player. It could be Gundogan who had the complaint. Who knows? But either way, the perception's out there, and now Goretzka has to overcome that. It would not shock me if Nagelsmann left him home, but I think Goretzka can really make a strong case for himself with a finish like we know he can play in this Bundesliga season and in the Champions League. If he can step his game up on that big stage, he's going to make a convincing point that he has the ability, because if you've watched him play for Bayern Munich this season, for all of his detractors, he has been pretty good. And I know, like, this has been one of our big debates at BFW. You have a very strong anti-Goretzka contingent. You have a very strong anti-Kimmich contingent right now. But Goretzka, I feel like, has been solid. I think he's been really good of late. And if he can make this strong finish, and especially if he can play well in those Champions League matches against Arsenal, and if somehow Bayern progresses past Arsenal and faces off against City and or Real Madrid, this could be a really good opportunity for Goretzka to say, hey, I have done it on the biggest stage. I've performed. I've taken on the best of the best. I deserve a spot at the Euros. And Nagelsmann will really have to think about that. And maybe, just maybe, with that story being out there, Goretzka will be a little bit more conscientious of how he's perceived, about how he acts, about what he says. It's just ironic with Gundogan being the subject that was taken out. Gundogan, you could really argue, has been the weakest of the links in Germany's starting 11 over the last two games. I talked about it in both post-game shows. I really was not a fan of how he played. I thought he was the one thing that didn't really look like it was working. But with the way the attack functioned as a unit, it's tough to argue about taking him out. And with him being the captain, I don't know that Nagelsmann wants that headache or that kind of distraction. So Gundogan, in my mind, he would be on a very short leash. I thought Thomas Muller, in the brief time that he played in those two games, was better than Gundogan, and that's not even a Bayern Munich bias. It just seemed like he was more impactful. But I also think that you have some other options that you could use. I would have liked to have seen Dennis Undorf get a little bit more playing time, because I don't know that he's just limited to being a striker. I think he can play in a attacking midfield role as well, especially with the way that that unit functioned. He might even be a better fit than Gundogan. And as we know right now, it's really just all about fit. And if Nagelsmann feels like a player is a better fit for the unit, he might be inclined to make that move. But either way, Goretzka has the opportunity to shine. And if he can do that, he'll put some pressure on Nagelsmann. Finally, when it comes to the attack, we saw a story break on Thursday about Timo Werner and Nagelsmann having a conversation with Werner before the call-ups were made, telling him that he still has an opportunity to make the Euro squad if he can finish the season strongly with Tottenham Hotspur. Now, Timo Werner is another guy vilified in many footballing ranks, especially when you talk to people about the German national team. The funny part is about Werner, and you know, I don't hide my past. I've been a big supporter of Timo Werner, and I think with his style of play and how this team is looking right now and the way that they're playing, he actually would be a pretty good fit, because there's so much interchanging of positions. I mean, literally all four of the attackers right now are changing all over the place, because you're playing, for all intents and purposes, four attacking midfielders right now. I still rate Kai Havertz as a true attacking midfielder, and Florian Wirtz and Jamal Musiala are attacking midfielders. And Nagelsmann, with all of those attacking midfielders available, is playing Ilkay Gundogan, who I've always have viewed as more of an eight at the 10. So either way, I think Werner actually would be a very good complementary piece to a Euros roster. I'm really eager to see what happens. Now, I know Nagelsmann likes Werner from their time together at RB Leipzig, even though with the way Werner handled his transfer at the end of his tenure at Leipzig, leaving early for Chelsea, that rubbed a lot of people the wrong way, including me. I would not have done what he did at that time. But Nagelsmann doesn't seem to be holding a grudge with it. Seems to value Werner. But what I would worry about, and I don't think, honestly, I don't think Werner's going to get the call because I have a lot of doubt that he's going to be able to step his play up for Tottenham. One, because they're going to play a lot of options right now in the attack. I don't know how much consistent playing time he's going to get. And when he's out there, he has no choice but to shine. If he does not go out and do something, he's not going to be able to make this case to make this Euros team. So I don't think Timo Werner is in a very powerful position. I'd love to see him make this squad because I do think he brings some things that could really be advantageous for Nagelsmann. When you talk about the way that Florian Wirtz and Jamal Musiala are able to create, I think that Werner would be a perfect kind of guy to come in and be a change of pace in the attack from Kai Havertz or Niklas Füllkrug, or even for Ilkay Gundogan, and to be able to come in and exploit some space, give a long ball option to change things up, and also just stretch the field to create some room for Wirtz and Musiala to do what they do best, which is break down defenses. So I think Werner, if he can somehow find a way to get consistent field time at Tottenham and he can make impacts in games, he'll be okay. I just don't know if he's going to be able to do that. I don't know if he's going to get the opportunity at Tottenham. So while I would like to see it, I don't know if we are actually going to see Timo Werner get the call for the Euros. So stay tuned for all of that because we will have, I'm sure, plenty of stories breaking over the next few weeks with ideas about what Nagelsmann's going to do, rumors about what he's going to do, and all of that. So that'll be a lot of fun for us to track as we head into the Euros. One of the other big stories, and this was probably the most massive story that broke this week, was the scathing retort from Alphonso Davies' agent to Bayern Munich about the quote-unquote ultimatum that was levied down upon him. That was absolutely something that I did not expect to see. Now, we know that Davies' agent is a little bit of a loose cannon at times. I will absolutely butcher his name, but it's Nick Husa, I guess. I'm not great at pronunciation. So if you guys want to bust my stones or break my stones about that, go ahead. I know you love to do that. But this statement I thought was really telling and I thought a little bit misleading as well. So let's see what Husa said in regards to the most recent stories about Bayern Munich giving Alphonso Davies a week to make his mind up with their best and final offer. It's unfair that Alphonso is now being attacked. We were close to an agreement a year ago. Then the entire club management was replaced. We didn't hear anything for 7 months, although I tried during this time to contact the club myself. Now we are being given an ultimatum and are supposed to react within 2 weeks because the club is under pressure and took a long time to reposition itself in the management. That's not fair. It's a very important contract in Alphonso's career, and we're supposed to make that decision without knowing who the coach will be next season or what the team looks like. That's why we think it's unfair to react to the ultimatum. We will decide how to proceed at the end of the season when there is more clarity. So as you can see, that is a pretty definitive statement. They are not going to be bullied into accepting any kind of offer or rejecting any kind of offer from Bayern Munich. And what we do know about that offer is it's rumored to be between 13 and 14 million euros per season, far down from the 20 million euros that he wants. We know that Real Madrid is lurking in the background. We know that Husa has been over to Spain and has talked to both Real Madrid and FC Barcelona. We also know that Liverpool, Man City, and Chelsea are also very eager to try and get Davies over to England. So what we absolutely don't know definitively is what Davies' plans are. And maybe he doesn't even know. All we can go off of is the most recent reports that we see, which indicate that Real Madrid and Davies seem to be aligned. They seem to be on the same page about making this move. However, the timing of the move is the biggest thing that is really uncertain. Davies, it would seem, wants to leave this summer. He wants to go get his big platform in La Liga with Real Madrid and become this worldwide star that he believes he can be. The problem is Real Madrid does not have any interest in paying anywhere near what Bayern Munich wants to, which is rumored to be around 50 to 60 million. We've seen some figures as low as 40 million, all too low for a talent like Davies, if you ask me. We've seen that Real Madrid wants to pay no more than like 20 million, which is ridiculous. And it puts Bayern in this awful position. Bayern Munich does not have a great negotiating point here. They don't have any leverage. They literally have to make a decision. Are we going to be undercut for Davies and sell him now and accept the cash? Or are we going to just use Davies for the next year, knowing he's going to leave, maybe taking the long shot Hail Mary that he will eventually change his mind and respond and re-sign with the club? Probably not going to happen. And if they do that, they are definitely going to take the risk of losing him for free. And I think at this point, Real Madrid, because of Davies' young age, they'd be perfectly fine with him spending one more year in Germany, playing for a top-flight club like Bayern Munich, and then eventually just making that move over to Madrid for free. And then Davies would be able to get that money that he wants. If he wants 20 million per season, he might be able to get it, because I'm going to guess, and I don't know for sure, obviously, but I'm going to guess that Real Madrid's offer to Davies isn't all that far off from what Bayern Munich is offering him in terms of salary. So if Davies can make that move without a transfer fee, I think we're going to see a better salary for Davies, and Real Madrid maybe push for that to happen, because it's not an absolutely urgent situation. If Madrid is really getting Kylian Mbappe this year, it would be no big deal to wait and get Alphonso Davies in the summer of 2025. But with this statement, what it tells me is Bayern Munich is in a little bit of trouble with this. But I do dispute some of the things in there, and I question some of the things. When he talks about, the agent talks about, we were close to an agreement a year ago. Okay, I believe that. Brazo and Davies were tight. They had a lot of communication. We all heard about that at the time. But what's the difference now between now and then? The salary offer, I'm sure, did not get dropped. I think we would hear a specific complaint from the agent if Brazo went in there with a 20 million per season offer and now Bayern Munich dropped it by 6 to 7 million. That would absolutely be part of any statement like this, because the agent would say Bayern Munich is going back on its word. It reduced its offer. We're not happy about it. That would be the lead in any type of statement, but we're not seeing that. So what's the difference now? Why, if Brazo did offer somewhere in the neighborhood of 13 to 14 million per season, why was that good enough then but not good enough now? Was there a Brazo tax because he got sacked? I don't know. That's one of the problems I had with the statement. When the agent talks about we didn't hear anything for 7 months, man, I really have a lot of trouble believing that. I do. And when he says he tried to contact the club, I find it hard that for such a young key player like Davies, that Bayern would ignore a call from his agent or push it off or anything. I mean, it's possible, but does that seem like the work of a renowned club like Bayern Munich, one who has been not just engaged with their players and the players' representation? I mean, this is not something that they would do or how they would act. It would be very uncharacteristic. Doesn't mean it couldn't happen, but it makes it seem very hard to believe. And I get the hesitation. I get it. They do not want to make a decision without Davies knowing who the coach is and what this team looks like. Fully understood, and that's a fair point. That's the one thing with Max Eberl's statement and the ultimatum, or whatever you want to call it. It didn't make sense because there's so much uncertainty with the club that if you're a player and you want to make a decision, I mean, just look at Leroy Sané and Joshua Kimmich. They may both have talked to the club informally, but nothing's getting done until after the season because everyone wants to see who the new coach is. And that's going to be a very important hire. And for sure, Max Eberl is going to have his work cut out for him, because once that decision is made, he then is going to have to go into hyperdrive to try and get some of these current players re-upped or re-signed or keep them in-house and then target new players. So this is not going to be an easy period for Max Eberl. I don't know that this is going to be a very friendly negotiation with Davies and his representation from this point forward. It was a very aggressive statement. There were a lot of claims made, but I do ask the biggest question: what's the difference in the offer? If you got that offer and it was written and it was in some, you know, it was written in cement, you got this, you were waiting on to sign it. What was it? And how different is it? And why is this a problem now? If Brazo went in with a $20 million per season offer, let's just say he did, I am 100% sure that this agent would be crying about that, saying they offered us 20, now they're lowering it. This is bad business. I don't know. That's how I mean, if I was the agent, that would be my first tactic there, to talk about the offer being inferior to what was previously presented to them. So I don't know. We'll see what happens with that, but that is absolutely going to be something that's going to capture the attention of Bavarian Football Works for the immediate future, and probably dipping into the summer. So we're going to take a quick break. We're going to take a look at some of the latest news on Bayern Munich's coaching search. And then we're going to tackle some of the most recent transfer rumors, especially ones that we've heard about the wing position. Does Bayern really need anyone else at wing? If so, who should they get? Hang with us. We'll be right back.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes.
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Hey, everybody. Thanks for hanging in there through that break. This is Chuck Smith, and I am here with the Weekend Warm-Up Show. Appreciate you listening to that first segment where we hit on some of the possibilities for player replacements for the Euros for Germany, and also that very messy Alphonso Davies contract situation. Things are not looking great there. But when it comes down to the most recent news about Bayern Munich's coaching search, it's pretty consistent about who the top target is. Xabi Alonso, Bayer Leverkusen's coach, is the one that everyone is targeting for Bayern Munich. He's also been linked to Liverpool. But I will say this, some recent stories out of England have broken over the course of me recording this that indicate that Xabi Alonso is probably going to stay with Bayer Leverkusen. Again, we don't know for sure if these reports are true. In fact, I wouldn't put much weight in them at this point, but it doesn't mean that he's actually thinking about leaving either. So there's at least a possibility that Xabi Alonso is going to stay. And if he does, where does Bayern Munich go from there? Well, the two names that emerged this week, and sorry for you guys that really wanted to embrace chaos, it's not Jose Mourinho or Antonio Conte, because I believe those two would have probably turned BFW into a war zone, but it won't be those two if you believe another report. But the two names, Roberto De Zerbi and Ralf Rangnick, the Austrian coach. So Rangnick was the one that would emerge today. We had heard the rumors about De Zerbi before, but Rangnick is a little bit of a surprise, and I don't know how great of a fit he would be at this stage of his career. I do like him as a personnel man, being able to judge talent. I think that he's got a keen eye for that. As far as coaching Bayern Munich, it would seem like a little bit of a weird fit to me. And I would have to probably be one of these people who has to see it to believe it. It's not that he can't come in and do the job, but I think this is a very difficult position. And I don't think it's going to be one that's going to be easily filled. And I think it's really going to come down to one person being a pure fit for it. And that person's Alonso. And if he doesn't go and he doesn't want to make the move this summer, I think Bayern Munich's going to have a tough time finding the right fit. And fit is a problem, as we have seen over the last few coaching hires. Again, I always like to go back. I like to start with Pep, because Jupp Heynckes, he won that treble, and Pep was already ordained as coming in. You could have really made a strong argument that Heynckes had way more in the tank. He did show that later. But Pep Guardiola came in, did what he does, didn't win anything of significance other than the Bundesliga. I know it's saying other than, but he did not lead the team to European glory, and it's not a knock on Pep. He's a great coach. Maybe wasn't the best fit at Bayern Munich in terms of being able to guide that team as it was comprised to something like a Champions League title. So fit maybe was an issue, and he was never going to be a long-term coach at Bayern Munich. So you could argue with Heinkes already in tow, there's some reason to at least say that the fit was a question with Guardiola. And even though he did bring some excitement and he brought his unique brand to Munich, you could really argue, if you wanted to, that he did not achieve everything that he should have with the talent that he had on the roster. You talk about Carlo Ancelotti after Pep, and he was not a fit. You talk about Niko Kovac, not a fit. And these guys were not fits for a couple of reasons. Organizational support, how they interacted with players, their ideologies and philosophies. You could go on and on. They just weren't fits with the roster. And this is a high-maintenance roster. Still, to this day, it is high-maintenance. You've got very, very expensive veterans. You've got emerging up-and-coming talent. You've got mid-career guys at their peak, and you have to meld it all together and make it work with all of these egos. It's not easy. And the one guy that really did seem like he had a feel for it was Hansi Flick, who got into an ego battle with Brazo. And of course, that war ended Flick's tenure a little bit early, which led to Julian Nagelsmann. Again, brilliant guy, can't help himself sometimes, but the fit with the roster was an issue. Let's be honest, the biggest issue, of course, was with Robert Lewandowski in his first season and then with a couple of other players in that fateful second season. And I like Nagelsmann, just like I liked Kovac and I liked Ancelotti. I liked all those guys as coaches, as people. I thought they were very interesting selections. But even though I liked them as selections, the fit just wasn't there. You could do a book about Ancelotti and how much he didn't fit at Bayern Munich and some of the stuff that was going on with him. But Nagelsmann seemed like he was going to be the one, the guy that was going to be that next generation kind of coach that was going to be there for a while, and he was going to win multiple championships and, you know, European glory and all that. Didn't work. And Tuchel came in to replace him. And again, it's a smart guy. Very smart tactically and strategically, does a lot of really good things. Didn't fit with this roster. Butted heads immediately, didn't know how to handle them, didn't know how to talk to them, didn't know how to address them in the media. Very difficult times. So fit, it's all about the fit. And when I look at these candidates, I am still stuck on Xabi Alonso being the only one that is truly going to fit. Someone that's going to be able to walk into that locker room, command respect, not have his tactics and ideas questioned. I mean, listen, all these locker rooms question coaches now, but Xabi Alonso has a lot. He carries a lot of clout. And what he did this year with Bayer Leverkusen has borderline made him a legendary figure at this point in Germany, because no one expected Bayer Leverkusen to be in this spot right now. With Alonso, he is the one. I don't know if De Zerbi or if Ralf Rangnick could come in and do what Alonso can do. And I know, and I understand with Xabi Alonso, it's not as if he's got this long track record of success. But sometimes coaches just have that magic touch. He seems to have it. He seems to be able to relate with players and draw the best out of them. And I think he does a lot of that, not just because he has their respect from his playing days, but because he is someone that can build those relationships. He was a glue figure, even at Bayern Munich, someone that was respected by his teammates and coaches alike, someone who was able to mend fences with people. And when there was conflict, be someone in that locker room that players could talk to, that could lean on for his experience, given everything he had done in his career. I mean, if there ever was a player tailor-made to be a great coach, it might be Xabi Alonso. And maybe it's Bayern Munich's fault for not buying low on him. But I understand you want to see the guy prove it. And he's done nothing but do exactly that since he's taken the helm at Bayer Leverkusen. So Xabi Alonso is the only one, I think, that can get the job done. As far as those transfer rumors go, when we talk about adding a new winger, it's a very divisive topic because in a lot of ways, Bayern Munich, they don't need a new wing at all. They have Leroy Sané. They have Jamal Musiala, whose best position is as a wing. They have Serge Gnabry. They have Kingsley Coman. They have Brian Zaragoza. And listen, that is a good and quality group. That is a strong winger group. That is five players that can absolutely play that position. Zaragoza is the one we haven't seen a lot of. We don't know. It doesn't seem like things are clicking in Germany for him. We'll get into that in just a sec. But it's not a position of weakness or a position where they need anything. But it does seem like it's a position where the club wants to make some changes. Sané is going to be a player who I think re-ups. I think everything is pointing to this. It looks like he's a guy who loves being at Bayern, who loves living in Bavaria, and whose family wants to be there as well. And I think that's a very important thing for Sané. He does have that house in Los Angeles. Maybe one day he'll go to LAFC or something. But it seems like his family's really intent on being there, and seems like he is all in and all about staying. So I don't think you're going to see any shock or surprise from Sané. I mean, I suppose the draw of going back to City could be there for him, going back and trying to achieve something there, maybe. But I don't know. It seems like Sané is very comfortable, and I think for him, comfort rules the roost right now, and he wants to remain with Bayern Munich. When it comes to Gnabry, he's always the one that we point to as someone who has the potential to leave. I rate Gnabry higher than a lot of people. I think he's a guy that can step up in the right moment. His biggest problem, aside of staying healthy, is that he's so mercurial and so up and down, it can drive fans crazy. And yes, it has driven me crazy. As someone who actually thinks he's good, it does drive me nuts. I cannot stand when he goes through these lulls that he goes through. It's infuriating. But I think the club has seen enough of that act. And I think that they are more than willing to let him explore and see what's out there. And for him, I wouldn't be shocked if he entertains a move back to England, where his reputation is still really high and he's held in well regard there. I think that he could be a person that could make that jump and be an impactful player in the Premier League. If anyone goes, I think it will be Gnabry. As for Coman, again, his biggest problem is staying healthy. He is a true winger, someone who can break down a defense from the outside in. His finishing is not great. His crossing can sometimes not be great, but he does disrupt things. However, he is also a guy who the club values a lot. They really take a lot of pride in getting him as a youngster and keeping him. And it seems like they want him to be, he's not a one club player by any means, but they want him to feel like a guy that was there for a generation. I think they love that about him, that he has that capability to be a guy who stays from the time he's in his teens all the way through his retirement. I think there's an appeal to Bayern Munich for that. But I wouldn't be shocked in the summer of 2025 if the club doesn't see a consistent effort from him next season, or if he again spends most of the season injured. It wouldn't shock me for the club to maybe say, let's let him see what's out there. As for this season, I think he's not going anywhere just because of how he's valued. Zaragoza is one of the guys who probably is not going to last long. So I'm not going to bag on the guy's talent. I think he's got talent. I think he's a pretty nice player, and I think he offers something different to what he can do on the pitch and would be a really fun option for any coach to have on a roster. He and Tuchel do not seem to have hit it off. There does seem to be, based on some of the most recent reports, some issues with how and when he was acquired. It was actually described this week as Christoph Freund going rogue, essentially. I'm not directly quoting it, but essentially Freund going rogue and going after him without the support of the team's scouts, which was very interesting. So it seemed like Christoph Freund wanted to make this move. He wanted to get a player who he felt would help him put his imprint on the team. And remember, he did this right before Max Eberl took over, essentially. So he went out and got Zaragoza, who has not really done anything since he's gotten here. In my mind right now, if Bayern Munich is truly going to go out and get a winger, it could sell Gnabry, but it absolutely could loan out Zaragoza next season. And I've had this theory for a bit now that he'll play in the Hinrunde at Bayern Munich, probably won't actually play much, but he'll be on the roster. And then he'll get loaned out at midseason. I just don't see any way around it unless he comes in and just blows the doors off everyone. But the name we're seeing most linked to Bayern Munich in terms of being a wing is VfB Stuttgart's Chris Furyk, who had a really nice turn with Germany. I thought he did a lot of things well. He is a very steady wing, one that can consistently get up the field, that can create offense by crossing, much more of a traditional wing than I think Bayern Munich has in Serge Gnabry. And if that were to be the case, that would be the swap, I think it would make sense in some ways, because Furyk is more of a traditional winger, that he's not, to me, and I hate saying this because I really do like Gnabry, but to me, he's more of a striker playing wing. And it's not that Gnabry can't do things, it's just sometimes he doesn't do them. And I think if they had a more consistent winger playing with Harry Kane, you would get more deliveries in from crosses. You would have the opportunity for Kane to do a little bit more damage. So I don't mind Furyk. I kind of like his game. I think he could be really good at Bayern Munich. Look, listen, he's a good player at Stuttgart. Being surrounded by all the talent that's at Bayern Munich, I think would elevate him a little bit more as well, and he would rise to it. And I think he would play well at Bayern Munich. Will they go out and do that? I don't know. If they do, I think it's the end of Serge Gnabry and or Ryan Zaragoza, though. So definitely something to keep an eye on. Furyk is an interesting name. Again, not a player who's getting a lot of support in the BFW community. It seems to be pretty torn on him as well. But I do think he is a guy who would be a pretty low-risk transfer in my mind, because I think he could come in and do a very good job for Bayern Munich, given all of the players that Bayern currently has. And just not that many true wing profiles. You could really argue that Zane is more of an attacking midfielder these days with the way he plays. So, but again, none of this would really matter if Musiala would just commit to playing wing, because he's so good out there. God, if I could get in that kid's ear, if he would actually listen to me, which he never would, why would he? I would say, play wing. You could be the best wing on earth. You could be the one. That would be my pitch to him. Probably wouldn't work, but that's it. We're going to take one more quick break. I do want to do a little bit of an entertainment rundown at the end here. I just want to touch on Curb Your Enthusiasm. So hang with us. It'll be a quick segment. We'll be right back.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial. And with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown. And through adaptable problem solving, we do just that. Learn more at Marines.com.
Hey everybody, welcome back to the Weekend Warm-Up Show. This is Chuck Smith. Thanks for listening today. I did want to touch on Curb Your Enthusiasm because this season has been really good. And while you could argue it's not as strong as some other seasons, and by all means, there have been some seasons of Curb where it has been nonstop laughter from start to finish, where there hasn't been a down moment. And this season has been really good, but not at the peak of what Curb was. But this episode was another one where you had a lot of different storylines going on. You had Larry just being Larry, being a jerk to everyone around him, making the colostomy bag comment, and then thinking he messed up socially, and then finding out that he got taken for it. We had the valet. We had Jeff trying to make Larry give Larry his power of attorney because he didn't trust Susie. We had some great Larry Susie interactions. We had the cheese. We had Richard Lewis buying a car. There were so many different storylines. And it really is what Curb does so brilliantly. They absolutely capture all of those storylines and they just bring them together. And that's really what I wanted to talk about, how all of this melded at the end of that episode was just fantastic. I mean, Larry himself, with the interactions he has with people, to me, that's the key to the show in terms of how many laughs you're going to get, because he has so many awkward interactions and contentious interactions. It's just funny. Everything just breeds comedy, from how he talks to his mannerisms to how he relates to other people. It's just great. I enjoyed it thoroughly. It was a lot of fun, and there were a lot of great moments like that. One thing I did want to call out, though, was when Leon went to out to see the Mercedes, and he made the Mr. Peanut comment. I think I spit my water out because it was so damn funny. Leon, I mean, what a character on that show. He can just take over a scene without even trying. His delivery just gets me every time. When he dropped the Mr. Peanut line, I just couldn't contain myself. It was really great. So if you get a chance to check out that episode of Curb, you absolutely should. I gave it a 4.0 out of 5. Again, didn't like rate it the highest. Like I had some, I think I had a 5 or 2 this season. It was really good. But, you know, listen, it's tough to get to that top level of Curb again. You've got to be rolling and hitting on all cylinders from start to finish. And this episode had a couple of, I don't want to say quick lulls. They weren't like major ones, but some huge funny moments, and totally enjoyed it. So check out Curb. And no, I have not gotten to that Rick and Michonne show. And I'm telling you, it's a subconscious thing where my mind is not letting me restart, because it's telling me, you idiot, why are you going to go through this? You know you're going to be let down. You just know it. That's what my brain is telling me. I'm still determined to at some point start this, and maybe I will this weekend, as I should have a little bit more time than I have had of late. And I know you guys are pushing me to watch Shogun, and I'm going to try and muster up the energy to do that. So I'm going to start researching ways where I can do that. I think it might be on Hulu, but I am not positive. I'll look into that. But anyway, I'm going to wrap up this weekend warm-up show. I do appreciate you guys checking in, and apologies again for this coming out a couple of hours later than usual. It has just been absolutely crazy. And, personally, I've had a lot of stuff going on, and professionally as well. So, appreciate the patience with that. As always, you can get me at the Barrel Blog on Twitter. You can get the site at Bavarian FB Works. You can get this podcast at Bavarian Podcast. You can get I Need No Name at BFWIN. And then you can get Tom Adams at TommyAdams71. You can get Siler at BFW Siler. If you didn't get a chance to check out our post-game shows from over the course of last week, definitely hit those. If you didn't get a chance to listen to the preview ahead of Derek Lasker, get that as well. You're getting a lot of me. I know some of you don't like that, but hey, I'm what you got right now. Scheduling hasn't been easy for some of the other podcasters, so I am personally looking forward to hearing their voices sooner rather than later. Enjoy Derek Lasker this weekend. It should be a lot of fun. It's always fun when Bayern and Dortmund get together. So, as I said, if you want more on that match, check out the preview show. That's why I didn't dive too heavily into that subject matter on this podcast. Have a couple of beers on me. We'll see you next time.